It was so wonderful to walk into the studio this morning and hear Amy Goodman pitching for folks to become members. I have a fabulous program in store for you this morning. I will be interviewing Dr. Rebecca Peoples-Massengill, and she is the author of Walmart Wars, Moral Populism in the 21st Century. I want you to know that Dr. Massengill is a professor at Harvard University. And so at Princeton. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's probably a big faux pas. At Princeton University's Mathey College, where she is a sociologist. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks so much for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you here today. You may know that we feel Walmart in our bones here in Oregon. I don't know if you've been warned about us here.
Well, I certainly understand that there's a powerful sort of anti-Walmart presence in the Portland area.
And it's almost instinctive, right? As soon as we hear the name. And so your book is just such a wonderful opportunity for us to really figure out why we have that feeling. And I love the fact that at the beginning of your book, you start off by saying, and this book is not about Walmart.
Right. The book is and isn't about Walmart. I think it's certainly about more than Walmart is another way of putting that.
I think that's a great way to put it. And I want to let our listeners know that we have 6 of your books available as thank you gifts throughout the program. We will be encouraging people to become members. And so some of our early callers are going to be fortunate enough to have a copy of your book themselves. And so let's start off by me asking you, why did you write this book?
Yeah. You know, I think that I've always been interested in morality and really, broadly speaking, sort of the way that we live out values and the way that we enact the things that we care about as a community. And certainly the economy is one place that we do that. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in Walmart as a kind of case study because the moral fault lines of the kinds of debates that communities have over Walmart and are really our country, I think, at some level has about Walmart, really tap into these deeper kind of moral ideas. Because on one hand, there's that sort of Calvinist ethic that supports thrift, you know, that we think that there's something good about getting the best price for things.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, the global supply chain that Walmart and many other retailers like it exploits has other moral implications that are very troubling, obviously, at a deep level, whether it has to do with the effects on the environment or the ways in which workers who are making goods or workers who are selling those goods are compensated and mm-hmm. protected in the labor market. And so I was interested in looking more closely at the kind of language that we use to talk about Walmart as a way of tapping into some of these debates that we have that have moral dimensions on both sides, really.
Right. And you raise a really good point. Do you think that Americans in general understand the supply and demand and how the economy really works? I mean, you know, if you can go to Walmart and get something for $10.99, do people really think about, well, is this person that made this product making a living wage? You know, is this a quality product, et cetera? Are people going through that, or is it really about that mindset of getting the most for the least amount of money?
Right. You know, I think certainly there are some consumers that do, and the proliferation of sort of fair trade options or a website like Etsy that supports artisans who are making products for sale to consumers. You know, I think certainly there are outlets in our economic system for that kind of consumption, but I think for the most part, many of us are not really thinking about those things when we go to Walmart or Target or Kmart to buy paper towels or clothes for our kids or socks or underwear and those kinds of things. And the nature of the way that goods are produced and sourced really insulates us from often having to think at a deeper level about the implications of those decisions. You know, we're not, partly because we've become less and less a country that makes things, we're less likely to know people who work in manufacturing, and we're less likely to have a neighbor or a family member who's a member of a union and can actually speak about the kinds of conditions in which they're working and the ways in which their employer might have created safeguards or protections for them. So I think that, unfortunately, many of these decisions are not ones that we're really consciously thinking about.
And so should we be? I mean, should we be connecting the dots?
Well, I think we should. Certainly, that's my own opinion. I think that, you know, events like the recent fire in the factory in Bangladesh, in which Walmart and some other retailers and manufacturers were implicated, forces us to think about the human cost of those kinds of production systems. You know, as people who care about human rights, who care about human well-being, I think that we cannot escape these questions. You know, at the same time, it's difficult to foresee a way to always make decisions that are purely ethical, just because this global supply chain that has many different opportunities for exploitation in it is so inescapable. You know, it'd be very, very hard to only buy, say, clothing or textile goods that were made in the United States.
You probably couldn't find them unless you, maybe an internet search, you could find them. But yeah, it would be really, really difficult. I'm one of those people that look at all the labels, and it's absolutely fascinating to me that everything is from China or Bangladesh or India or someplace. But that's certainly another story. When we come back from asking people to become members, I want to spend some time talking about the free trade agreements and find out if you actually did some research around how those federal policy decisions really impacted this Walmart wars and what that process looks like. So I'll give you a moment to kind of think about that as we start encouraging people to give us a call at 877-500-5266 either renew or become a member of KBOO. It's really important for us at this time. I'm so excited because it looks like we are doing fabulous for this fund drive. I think we're right around $90,000 right now. We only need another, $35,000, and we will have a successful pledge drive. And so I really want to thank people for really stepping up. It seems like people are really paying attention and really supporting us. And so if you want a copy of Dr. Rebecca Massengill's book entitled Walmart Wars, Moral Populism in the 21st Century, you can call us at 877-500-5266. And we've only got six copies, so if you don't call now, you may miss out on getting this really insightful book. Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely true. Pardon me, I clear my throat. It's so true. It's so true. And in fact, we have a matching grant still on the table. Matching challenge, which means that every dollar you give becomes $2 by the magic of magic. And we don't believe in magic, but there it is.
There it is.
1-877-500-5266. I said that too fast. I'm going to slow down.
We got time.
That's right. 1-877-500-5266. And if you're at your computer, you don't have to deal with people at all. You can just go KBOO, that's KBOO.FM. And bam, there'll be a big cartoony thing, and over the corner there'll be a tip jar, and you can put your money in there, and the world will be happier, and the sun will shine in your back door this day. 1-877-500-5266. Remember, it's a matching grant. We want you to take the opportunity to give money now, because the money you give is twice as much as you give.
You know, we are all volunteers here again.
Wait, you mean I'm not being paid?
Well, sorry.
Holy smoke, I've been doing this for years. Nobody pays
me. You got
some
coffee.
Coffee. I need the coffee.
1-877-500-5266. There's 6 full-time staff here. We have 500-plus volunteers, 4,500 members, and listen to this, 45,000 listeners. If every listener gave just $1... My goodness, we would be...
We'd have 45.
We'd have 45, you know, math. We do higher math. Higher math happens here at
Boy,
Cable.
We are... Look at how amateur we really are. We are so listener-supported.
877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm.
And if you want a really weird experience,
ooh,
come on down here. See the walls covered with ermine, the mm-hmm. gold-plated toilet seats, everything you could imagine, and more.
And more.
And more. Actually, and way less. We are pretty funky outfit. 1-877-500-5266.
Duct tape and baling twine is what we work on here at KBOO and Squirrels that turn the treadmills of democracy.
The treadmills of truth.
The treadmills of truth, justice, and the KBOO way here at 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and see it live, see it personal. And bring your checkbook.
Yeah, bring your checkbook.
Or
bring your
cash.
Money. Bring all your money. We have a matching grant. Every dollar you give is another dollar beyond the dollar you've given. That doesn't make sense to me.
It makes perfect sense to me.
But it's true.
And how wonderful that today you can get the book. You can also double your money. And the number 877-500-5266. We're going to go back and talk to our guest. I asked her a very big question before we went to break. So I'm hopeful that we will start with the free trade agreements and the impact that those have had on the consciousness and awareness of American shoppers.
Right. Thanks, Joanne. I think that... It's useful, perhaps, to think about NAFTA, which is, you know, almost 20 years old now. NAFTA was enacted in 1994. And so, you know, by eliminating some of the trade penalties for goods that we imported as Americans, you know, NAFTA did a number of things. And I think that you would find that economists are sort of mixed in their evaluation of the consequences of this. But, you know, I remember actually, I hate to reveal how old I am, but I remember being in high school when NAFTA was ratified. And, you know, the internet was not even part of our kind of idea or consciousness 20 years ago. And so in conjunction with these changes in trade policy, we've also had really, really significant changes in technology. And that means that a number of things have happened at the same time that have really disadvantaged people throughout the globe who have less education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see these things as being connected, that the same workers who are no longer employed in manufacturing in the United States, for instance, whose jobs have been outsourced to Mexico, to Southeast Asia, to other places around the country, in a sense, they are even more trapped now than they were 20 years ago, not only because manufacturing jobs have left our borders, but also because they really need those low prices that are offered at retailers like Walmart. So I think that, you know, in addition to the kind of structural changes that have been precipitated by free trade, it also makes these ideological and really practical kind of dilemmas even more inescapable, because the position of less educated workers in our economy is worse now than it was a generation ago.
Wow, absolutely true. Also, in your book, you mentioned that there's really two sides to Walmart's image. There's one that's very, you know, we're about freedom and family and citizenship and the American way. And then there's this other side that's kind of hidden, but it's the abortion. They're anti-abortion. They're anti-same-sex marriage. They have this very conservative approach And so those public images of Walmart are in conflict, almost like they're schizophrenic of each other.
Yeah. As I got further and further into my research for this project, I realized that this Walmart case, I think, is in some ways very representative of other kinds of political discourse or political language, which we see, obviously, more and more examples of that today. And I think that these two sides are really prioritizing different kind of core moral concepts. And one of the things that I argue in the book is that the progressives, who tend to be much more critical of Walmart, obviously, really talk a lot about citizens and employees and these kinds of, we might say, kind of more rationalized societal categories. Mm-hmm. And conservatives really talk about families. Mm-hmm. And they are really approaching these issues by framing the family as the central unit of economic activity, not the worker, not the citizen who's paying taxes. Mm-hmm. And it taps into this kind of significance of the family and other kinds of political struggle, I think. And we tend to think of the family as being mobilized more in these kinds of, you know, things that have to do with family values or sexuality or reproductive rights. But the family is also an economic concept, and that's one of the things that became really clear in the course of my research, is that the activists that were most supportive of Walmart again and again came back to the family and consumption as it happens in the family, and really spoke very movingly of middle-class families who were trying very hard to survive economically if, mm-hmm. you know, a wage earner had been laid off or a child wasn't able to become employed, and were really using Walmart and the low prices offered by Walmart as a way to survive economically. And obviously that doesn't diminish the consequences of the Walmart business model for lots of other people, including many of those same workers. But what I try to do in the book is show how these things are more complicated than they might appear to be on the surface.
Right, because as soon as you start talking about, like, even the workers in Walmart, right, you have to talk about most of the workers are part-time. Mm-hmm. In fact, most of the workers qualify for public benefits, public services, because they don't make enough money at Walmart to actually support their family. And so, you know, so one side of the argument is, you know, if people made a living wage at Walmart, then, you know, then they wouldn't be getting public subsidies in order to basically survive in their community. So it sounds like we have this really weird policy, complicated policy issue around who benefits from our economy and who doesn't. And we need to go back and once again kind of encourage people to go to their telephones this morning and become members. But when I come back, I really want to talk about how these policy implications really play out in our day-to-day life. And as you said, Walmart's the example, but Walmart's not the only corporation that has these practices and that are benefiting with massive tax breaks at the expense of the local communities. And so we'll get into that when we come back. But I want to take this moment to say, listeners, call 877-500-5266. Renew or become a member of KBOO. This is our last week of a pledge drive. It's the last opportunity in a couple of months for us to personally ask you to go to the phone. I know many of you listen every single week. You tell me how much you enjoy Voices from the Edge, and I would enjoy it if you would go to your phone and give us a call at 877-500-5266. Show KBOO some love this morning. We've got some wonderful volunteers standing by to assist you.
Yes, we would all enjoy it very much if you called this morning at 877.
It's more than enjoy. We may have to shoot the dog. I mean, who knows?
No,
horrible things
dog.
Could happen if you don't call. Also, we have a matching grant.
Yes.
And no, we don't have a dog. Well, we do have
well,
a matching grant.
We do have
grant.
A dog, but we won't.
We're lying.
It.
We lie a lot. But
we
the
do.
Truth is that this
Run,
station
Sky.
Brings you the actual news in a very timely manner. It brings you the best music. And this is underplayed here.
It is
the best
underplayed.
Music in the region. And it is all free, except that now we have to ask you to make a goodwill, a free will, as they used to say in church, a free will offering. A free will offering, free which will be matched dollar for dollar by a generous person out there.
Ensure your entrance into the gates of...
Of what?
Of
life.
Of life.
The gates of life.
The gates of life.
Let the gates of light swing wide.
Wide open for you if you call now at 877-500-5266. You know...
Yeah, you know, come on, it's a matching grant. Every dollar you put in is another dollar beyond the dollar that you put in if you follow that. 1-877-500-5266.
It's a relationship, people. We have a relationship with you. You have a relationship with us.
It's good. It all is
give,
good. It is happiness.
Give, yes, and
happiness is a station called KBOO.
That's right.
1-877-500-5266.
Or go to the website. KBOO.
Website?
Yeah,
website?
It's amazing. And if you watch it long enough, there's a little trolley that runs along the whole thing. You can just sit
Holy
and watch the
smoky
trolley.
Wokey.
Yeah, it's high tech. KBOO.FM. Go there. Click on that jar. Donate from the comfort of your own home or your own cubicle or your pajamas.
You could be anywhere doing anything. We wouldn't know.
No, we wouldn't know. We wouldn't care, frankly, whatever you were doing.
Whatever. It's your own private business.
Yeah.
Unlike the government, which now spies on you a lot, and we tell you the truth about that, by the way.
Yeah, we do.
We don't pay any attention to your personal life. All we want is your money. We just pick your pocket. It's really a good deal. 1-877-500-5266.
We're very transparent about our
Boy, are we transparent. We are so transparent.
And we'd like to thank, actually, we have some people to thank. We'd like to thank Sean from Vancouver. He's a renewing member. And, this just in.
What? Just
Margaret in. From Salem.
Yay, Margaret!
Yay, Salem! State capital, the hub of our governmental center
of the sleaze in this state. And we'll tell you about the sleaze. We're going to talk next week. We're going to talk about how the governor has copied the language of the worst element of the worst. And I'm not going to give you any more than that.
In
the legislation that just got passed by the legislature.
Oh.
You will be shocked and amazed appalled.
We shouldn't be shocked anymore.
Really?
No.
503. I mean, no, that's not the number. 877-500-5266. All of a sudden, I went brain dead.
Well, let me repeat it because you messed up. 1-877-500-5266.
That is correct. Or KBOO.FM. If you want to become a member, I know you've been thinking about it. I know it's on your to-do list. Mm-hmm. This is the week for you to make that happen.
And it's matching money right now.
And it's matching money. It doesn't get any better than this. So if you have $100 that you can contribute to become a member of KBOO, that becomes $200 today because of a generous matching gift offer by another listener who decided that it was important to invest in KBOO, but they wanted to make sure the community was going to step up and invest too.
Step up.
If they're going to put their $500 in, they want you to help match that. And you can do that by just calling 877-500-5266 or going online to KBOO.FM and clicking the tip jar. Just that simple. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely true. I mean, it's so easy. All it takes is a little
child
bit of money.
Can do it.
A little bit of money. And you know what? It is really the most, you get the most for your money in this case. Anytime, anywhere, you can get online and a pretty, I don't know if it's, we can, you can do, if you go to the website, you can get any program anytime and you can get it live and real like right now. Just make a contribution, get it matched. You'll be so happy. Your personal life will improve.
Oh wow!
I don't want to talk about personally your personal life, but you know what I'm saying. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
So you'll be taller. You'll be more handsome. Women will love you.
Yeah.
And you will be. You will smell good.
Mm-hmm.
You will do all that because you have joined your community and joined your community radio station by giving us a call at 877-500-5266. Once again, 877-500-5266. Rebecca Messingill has some fabulous information in Walmart Wars. More
and
populism.
You can get her book.
In the 21st century is available.
Pledge.
Yes, for a minimum $60 membership opportunity. And that opportunity is going to be only shortly lived because we only have six, and if you miss your opportunity, you're going to be really upset.
Wait a minute. Do we have 666?
You know, that's not the sign of six.
No, we only have six.
Isn't this Halloween?
And it's been great talking to you guys, but I'm going to go back and continue my interview. And the number once again is 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm. Rebecca, thank you so much for your patience. We are certainly smack dab in the middle of our membership drive, and we are so pleased that you were able to join us this morning.
Great, and I'm glad to help support you as you do this. Community radio is a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you. And could you say a little bit more about that? Because I love when authors understand the importance of community radio. So just for about 30 seconds.
Sure. You know, I think that there are many ways in which we have to work harder to recognize our connections to each other in this world in which social media and technology and sometimes can make us feel even more estranged from each other. So to have an independent voice to talk about the things that a community cares about, to have an opportunity for people to make those connections both with their voice and with their mind, I think are really, really important. And I really value what you do.
Well, thank you so much. And we value what you do. Why don't you talk a little bit before I go back to my question about these public policy decisions and the impact that they're having on local communities? Talk a little bit about your day job. What do you do at Princeton?
You know, I've done a number of things at Princeton. I actually got my PhD in sociology here a few years ago, and I spent a number of years teaching here. I taught academic writing and sociology, and I actually, as of a couple of months ago, I've moved into a new job at the university where I have a position in one of the residential colleges here, and so I spend most of my time now advising students, actually, and helping them think about the classes they want to take and what they want to do with their lives, and it's a pretty great job. I love it.
It sounds like a wonderful job. Okay, let's jump back into the book. So the question about the impact of these major public policies, so whether it's the consistent big tax breaks and giveaways that we give to corporations to move jobs overseas, or whether it's the kind of free trade agreements that actually guarantee low wages for workers no matter where those jobs end up. I'm curious as to whether or not there's becoming more of an awareness that these things are interconnected.
Right. You know, I think one thing that has been interesting and hopeful in recent years have been local initiatives that have been addressed, you know, in some cases not just at Walmart, but at large retailers that, you know, are seeking to expand into urban markets that they've not been present in before. There have been some very notable kinds of examples of this nature in New York City, for instance, and most recently in Washington, D.C., where the city council had actually passed an ordinance, the Large Retailers Accountability Act, that said retailers, you know, seeking to open stores of a certain size needed to pay their workers a living wage. And in Washington, D.C., the mayor, Mayor Gray, actually came back and overturned that. And so Walmart is now building, as planned, its stores in Washington, D.C. But there are other examples that have been a little bit more successful for communities that have been trying to resist Walmart. And one of those was in New York City. New York City has been this sort of elusive market for Walmart, who's not yet been able to establish any stores in the five boroughs. And the reason I think that those kinds of policy decisions are noteworthy is that they are trying in a very explicit way to make these kinds of connections between the prices that we pay for things and the wages that workers are paid.
Right.
So they're trying to say, if you want to come in here and sell goods to our community and employ people who live in our community, you need to be paying them a wage that allows them to meet their basic human needs. And I think that those kinds of initiatives, while they have overall not been successful in getting concessions from Walmart, they have been successful at making these kinds of issues more visible and really a subject for public discussion. And I think that that's a really, really good thing.
Wonderful. And so you're right that there's a lot of organized effort. I didn't know about the New York example that you just mentioned, but there are a lot of examples of communities, and I think I mentioned in an email to you, in Portland, our former mayor was very public about his opposition to Walmart siting superstores in the Portland metropolitan area.
Right.
And of course, we have had many communities throughout the Portland metro area and throughout the state, quite frankly, who've organized to keep Walmarts out.
Right.
But I think you raise an interesting point in your book. Walmart is a business model that many other retailers emulate.
Mm-hmm.
And so why the visceral reaction to Walmart as compared to Target or some of the other big box stores?
You know, I think that that's due to a couple of things. And one is that Walmart, even though you're exactly right that they're, you know, sort of shades of gray that seem to separate Walmart and a competitor like Target, Walmart is substantially bigger than these competitors.
Right.
You know, Walmart, if it were its own sort of national entity, it would be larger than a number of sovereign countries in the world, right? So Walmart is massive. I also think that part of the reason that Walmart invites such sort of visceral opposition really has to do with the fact that it is a company that grew up in the American South, in a part of the country that did not have a long and sustained history with unions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an example of this sort of Southern evangelical sort of anti-union kind of business model that has been very much at odds with a more kind of sustained history and legacy with organized labor that we've seen, you know, in the Rust Belt or the Northeast. And so for that reason, Walmart has received much more opposition from mm-hmm. those communities because it symbolizes all of these things that are so different. So I think that part of the reaction has to do with the size and then also with the kind of distinctive ethos that we find in Walmart that's a little bit different from some of its competitors. You know, it's significant that not one of Walmart's domestic employees is a member of a union.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. And I was going to ask you, and is part of Walmart's success, and I put that in quotations, the fact that they've been so publicly anti-union for so long?
I mean, it certainly is. It allows them to pay their workers lower wages and fewer benefits than they might have to if those members were represented by a union. You know, it also, in a way, ensures the kind of compliance from workers that rests on things that actually don't have to do with economics. So Walmart has, you know, lots of folks have written about this, that Walmart is really successful at creating this kind of family ideology. You know,
right.
You're a member of the Walmart family, you're a member of our team, so you're not going to get written up, you're going to be coached.
Right.
You know, and if you have a problem in a family, you don't file a complaint. You know, you sit down and you talk with mom and dad or your big brother or your big sister or something like that, right?
Right,
people
right.
don't need to be represented
That's
in
right.
a family.
That's right.
And so that kind of ideology, which is also, again, sort of connected to the evangelical roots, I think, of the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certainly not saying that Walmart is a Christian company, but there's
right.
this really significant kind of religiosity, I think, knit into the DNA of the company that encourages this kind of quiescence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly part of what's been most distinctive about Walmart as compared to some of its competitors.
And I don't know if you've been watching, but it's been interesting watching fast foods workers start organizing, attempting to unionize and get more benefits and, of course, better working conditions. And I see that as a movement that's really building momentum around the country. And so if that happens, and, you know, maybe it'll happen. If that happens, then I would suspect that there'd be more pressure on corporations like Walmart to also provide that level of benefit for their employees.
Yeah, I think that sort of one of the ironies of these big sort of, we could call them McDonaldized corporations, use George Ritzer's word, you know, is that because they're so big,
right,
they're really notorious, and they attract a lot of negative attention. So this is sort of the downside of success,
right,
that when you're a big bad guy, a lot of people are watching you and waiting for you to make a mistake.
Right.
So I think in terms of public opinion, there are ways in which these big, whether they're fast food companies or retailers like Walmart, they are in some ways much more vulnerable to public criticism in large part due to their size and their success. And so that makes them more vulnerable to these kinds of criticisms.
And is it also true, since the workforce for Walmart, now I'm making an assumption, so you can tell me if my assumption is wrong. I'm assuming that the workforce are primarily women, primarily part-time, some students, across the board as far as age is concerned, but also, especially in the Deep South, right, have a large African-American population or large Latino populations. Is it that because this is the workforce that we tend to not care about their working conditions, is that why companies like Walmart have been able to get away with this for so long?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, you know, I don't have access to current figures about the number of part-time workers or the number of women or African-Americans that are employed at Walmart. You know, I do think it's the case that many people who end up applying for jobs in discount retailers are people who have less education, who have fewer options. You know, these are not necessarily jobs that people would be thrilled to take if they had other opportunities. That said, any time that Walmart opens up in an underserved community, you know, we hear anecdotal evidence about hundreds and hundreds of people in line just to apply for a job there, which doesn't necessarily tell us something about how great that job might be. It tells us something about that local labor market,
right,
in which I think you're right that the people who are most likely to be on the fringes of that are members of groups that have historically been marginalized.
I am talking to Rebecca, smacked myself. I'm talking to Rebecca Messingill, and she is the author of Walmart Wars, Moral Populism in the 21st Century. So what's your conclusion? I mean, are we just doomed to just keep replicating Walmart-like employers across the country?
Well, I hope not. I certainly hope not. You know, one of the things that I hope readers would take away from my book is that I think that the language that we use to talk about these issues really matters.
Mm.
And I said a few moments ago that, you know, I think that conservatives tend to hang their kind of arguments about economic issues around the family. And it's not necessarily the family in the kind of more culture wars way that we would think about it, but it's the family nonetheless. And that kind of language is just really powerful, and it's more powerful in some cases, I think, than talking about citizens. It's certainly more powerful than talking about employees or taxpayers, even though we all wear those identities as well.
Right.
So I think that one takeaway point from my book is that progressives need to find a way to talk about the family.
You know, you raise an excellent point, and the example I use has been the gay rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the gay rights movement was responding to the religious right and to their messaging, they lost all across the country. The minute they regrouped and started reframing the conversation around love, around family, around support, all of a sudden, the conversation was radically different.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to pick this up when we come back from encouraging people to give us a call. Once again, here's your opportunity to make your money double by giving to KBOO. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. And some wonderful volunteer will answer your call and give you the opportunity to get Rebecca Messingill's book on Walmart Wars. Is that not correct?
That is absolutely true.
And how are we doing? Are the phones ringing off
well,
the hook?
I got to tell you, we need more phone calls.
We need more
now.
Calls. Okay.
This is very serious. We have a matching grant, $500. Every dollar you, dear listener, give the station turns into $2 by the magic of matching.
Mitosis.
And, yeah, go ahead.
It's mitosis.
Mitosis.
The, isn't that it?
Oh, meiosis. It's one of them things. One of them
doubling.
Things that I never
cell
really
splitting.
Learned well in school.
Money doubling.
Money doubling. 1-877-500-5266. I'm going to say that again slowly. 1-877-500-5266. You pick up your phone, you punch that in, you...
Punch it.
You could even have dial tone. Maybe some people have a dialing phone.
Weird.
The antique people out there.
Yeah.
And when you made that call, a handsome or whatever person...
we're all handsome.
We're all beautiful here.
Yes, we're all beautiful.
In the ermine-lined walls of the wonderful Cable Studios. And that the result will be that the station continues to survive.
And I want to emphasize that we are a station that has the best music programming in the region and the best news in public affairs. And we're not like, you know, the one that plays old-timey music to raise money. We play old-timey music because that's what we like. So it's KBOO.FM. That's KBOO.FM.
It's because we're old-timey.
Well, no, not all of us. Some of us are so young that we are babies.
Yes.
We bring babies
still
here.
Wet behind the ears, babies.
What is that?
Let's see. It is at 877-500-5266, the magic number to call.
Yes, that is the magic number.
That is the magic number.
It's magic. And, you know, before we get too much further here, I do have some people I'd like to thank. One would be Steve from Portland for renewing his membership. The other would be a few restaurants, local restaurants in town, who have generously donated some food down here to help the members and the volunteers. Tin Shed at 1438 Northeast Alberta Street, the Observatory at 8115 Southeast Stark Street, and Dine In 2 TWO, well, it's the letter, it's the number 2, Night, PDX, DINEIN2NITE.com. Yes, we would like to thank those people for donating some food for us, for our hungry volunteers. And call in 877-500-5266 today.
Thank you so much. And we will definitely come back and make sure that we have gotten all the calls we need today. And just before I go back to Rebecca, let me tell you what's coming up today on KBOO at 9 here, Press Watch. The news you're not supposed to know. With Teresa Mitchell at 9:30 on A Deeper Look. The guest is Robert Hillary King, a released member of the Angola 3, talking about the Free Albert Woodfox movement. At 10, hear Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Catherine Austin Fritz returns for another in-depth session of community business. At 11 on Between the Covers, Oregon writer Steve McQuitty, who talks about his new book, Here on the Edge, which looks at a conscientious objector camp located in Walport, Oregon during World War II. At 11:30 is the film show with news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. So that's what's coming up this morning on KBOO, your community radio station. And once again, the number is 877-500-5266 to become a member, or KBOO.FM. Just click the tip jar. So, Rebecca, we are back to continue to discuss Walmart Wars and what. So let me do the whole title: Walmart Wars, Moral Populism in the 21st Century. And we were talking about kind of walkaways from the book. We were talking about the fact that where do we end? I'm actually forgetting for the moment. We're talking about kind of what can people do? We're not doomed, I'm glad you said, to having Walmarts just sprout up everywhere. And we talked about reframing the message is where we left off at. And I used the example of the gay rights movement and how wonderful it's been to watch the reframed message be one that really connects with people's heart and minds.
Sure. I think, too, that there are certainly examples from the past. I think about, for instance, when Kathy Lee Giffords was producing a clothing line at Walmart that had been made in Honduras, allegedly by children.
Right.
You know, the outcry to something like that was so powerful,
right,
partly because we, again, have a kind of a tug in our hearts for children,
right,
obviously, who you know, should not be employed in a factory. I think about things like... you know, the Nestle formula boycott in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, so, and if we think historically, that was probably mm-hmm. one of the more successful consumer boycotts mm-hmm. that we've seen in recent history. And again, there are these really powerful, visceral kind of family connections there. Mm-hmm. Have to do with babies, right, and mothers, mm-hmm. breastfeeding. And I think that if we can tap into those kinds of images and connections, I think that progressive language has much more possibilities. And especially if we look at the past several years in the United States, where we've obviously experienced significant economic changes, really significant economic recession, we see different kinds of populist reactions to that. And on one hand, we might look at the Tea Party, which has been very populist in a way and really oriented against government, right?
Mm-hmm.
Government's the bad guy. Occupy Wall Street is also populist. It mm-hmm. comes on a different end of the political spectrum, but they're the bad guys or corporations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So both of these movements have tapped into a broad swath in some way in the American people, but they're looking at entirely different opponents,
mm-hmm.
right, whether it's government or corporation. So in some ways, I think both of those kinds of movements tap into this kind of feeling of economic insecurity that the middle class increasingly has in the United States, and with good reason,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The middle class is facing a very uncertain economic future, and I think that if we could get certain members of both of those groups to find some kind of common cause, I think that we might actually have... kind of a broader populist base from with which to pursue change.
And I gotta ask, do you think that's even possible?
You know, I think that those allegiances are connected to so many kinds of social status differences,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether they're political ideologies or education or religious ideologies. By the way, we could see religious connections on both sides of those movements. They might be more conservative kind of religious mm-hmm. connections in the on the conservative side and progressive religious organizations on the other side. You know, I think that we are looking at really significant divisions in our country, and that's for sure. But
yes.
You know, at the local level, I imagine that there could be ways in which some of these people could actually find common cause, and that might be something that we might see in the future.
I think that's an interesting proposal, and I wonder. I mean, for the Tea Party, I wonder if current public policy, like some of the movements that you talked about from the 70s and the 80s, the difference was that we didn't have the Patriot Act. We didn't have some of the federal laws that we have today that really scare people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scare people into not taking action, scare people into not actually taking to the street. And I think the big difference between the Tea Party and the Occupy movement is there were never police called on Tea Partiers, regardless of how many weapons they showed up to town hall meetings with. But with Occupy, the police were constantly there to contain that movement. So there's a different approach based on whether the organizers are on the left or the right. Mm-hmm. We're going to pick this up again right after we go back and encourage folks to become members. And we're going to encourage our listeners. And I've been just so fascinated by this conversation. I'm sure they've been as well. But now's a great time to go to your phone and call 877-500-5266. Or go to your computer and go to kbo.fm and become a member that way by clicking the tip jar.
That's right. In the comfort of your very own home, you can go to kbo.fm and click on that jar and do your donation in whatever way you choose to do it.
You really want to join us. If you're listening to KBOO, you know that it has the best in news and public affairs and incredible music, and you know that it exists by the support of people just like you. 84% of all of our monies come from people like you.
That's right.
And we have a matching grant. You know, you give a dollar more than that shows up on the accounts of KBOO. This is an important opportunity. We come to you three times a year to ask you for money. It's sort of a drag, but at least we don't play Lawrence Welk. You know what I'm saying?
Turn on the bubble machine.
We don't do that.
No, we don't.
We give you news that matters. We give you information that's important. We are honest. We are straightforward. We are listener-supported. And you are the listener who supports us.
And, you know, sometimes I hear people say, well, I just don't have a big chunk of money to give right now. Chunk of change. I don't have it. But, you know, it's the amazing what you can do with this electronic funds transfer is you can do like $5 a month. It's easy.
If you notice $5 a month coming out of your account, if you have an account and you notice $5 a month coming out of that account, you're amazing.
You're amazing. I do 15 a month, and you know I don't even notice it.
You probably don't even justify your checkbook. Come on, be honest.
No, I don't. I don't even look. But for those of you who do, and for those of you who do keep track, for what you get in return, which is amazing public affairs. It's amazing music. You get African music and Caribbean music and jazz and Latino music and hard rock and punk rock and old time rock and roll. It's a cornucopia.
A veritable cornucopia
of music and information that you're just not going
to
hear.
Don't miss this wonderful opportunity to keep this station going.
What's that number? Yes.
1-877-500-5266. I said it too fast. I'll say it again. 1-877-500-5266. I'm going to repeat it once more. 1-877-500-5266. Your money makes an incredible difference here. Our staff is underpaid and overworked and very small. Our volunteers are a huge number of people.
Huge.
Of which are us two. Whoa, there's an English problem there. 1-877-500-5266.
Yes, and if you have an old-timey phone, that 5266 spells out KBOO.
An old-timey phone?
An old-timey phone that has the numbers.
Where you crank it.
You crank it and you put your ear next
Hello,
to it.
Hello, Central. Give me Mr. Jazz. No.
That's right.
1-877-500-5266.
Or go to your fancy schmancy computer, kboo.fm. Click on that jar. Watch the little trolley move around. And give your money today. It's amazing. We rely on you, members like you. 60% of all individual giving is what we rely on here at KBOO.
Yeah, you know, this is really, we try to have a good time doing this, but this is an absolute necessity. I mean, in fact, this station would be silent without the support of folks just like you. Now, I know you may have given before. Now it's time to give again.
Give
if you've
again.
Never given before, now it's really time to give. You know that this is the moral and ethical thing to do. Mm-hmm. Guilt, guilt, guilt. 1-877-500-5266.
Give in to that liberal guilt. Why not? Get for $60 membership, get that Walmart Wars by Rebecca Massengill. She's being interviewed Well, right now, not right now, but if, as soon as we shut up, she will
be interviewed. If people call, the quicker we can shut up, you know.
And you can get that book, and you can read that book, and you can become a more informed Portland
Or you could get that book and not read that book.
Well, why not?
What the heck?
Yeah,
it's your book.
And know that that money is going to a good cause here at KBOO 877-500-5266. You know, we're running towards the end of our pledge drive. We have just a precious few days left. And if you're one of those people who's been waiting, you know, I think I'll wait until the last day to give my $20,000. Now is that time. It's that time is now. So call 877-500-5266. Put us over the top. We're already over the top. But join us over the top.
We're a little over the top. 1-877-500-5266. Won't you please make the telephone ring?
Yes, we encourage you to take this opportunity. This is the last week of our fall pledge drive. And if you would call 877-500-5266, one of our fabulous volunteers will take your call and help you become a member of KBOO. Want to thank all the wonderful volunteers who have been helping us throughout this pledge drive. We certainly could not do it without you. For the remainder time that I have with Rebecca, I want to continue the conversation that we started about where do we go from here? And it looks like, Rebecca, we have a caller who would love to ask you a question. So let's try to squeeze that in. Hello, Steve. Thank you for calling KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, listen, you know, I think she's right about that, that evangelical culture and this dominionist kind of culture that, you know, comes from the South. I really don't think it's too possible to bridge that gap. I mean, I've tried. It's like nailing Jell-O to a wall, you know. It's like you can get them to say, yes, 2 + 2 always equals 4, and then you can show them a fact or facts or any number of things where what they believe is 2 + 2 = 5, and they will say, well, what do you know? Sometimes 2 + 2 does equal 5. So, I think one of the things that she's right about is that the appeal to values where they're willing to sacrifice even their own lives because of the words, the talk about family values, well, even if those are just meaningless words in practice, is true. They're willing to sacrifice those things, and they say that the liberals are only pragmatic, you know, looking about economic issues or one thing or another. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of these people who think the only issues are, you know, abortion, homosexuality, gun rights, and taxation. Mm-hmm. Without, you know, and that's all they hear. The other thing is that if you want to raise money for KBOO, I heard a marathon, a radiothon for WBAI in the 60s, and people were not giving.
Hmm.
And suddenly WBAI just played Kate Smith singing God Bless America, and they said, we're going to play God Bless America with Kate Smith singing until somebody calls in. And there was a comedy duo, and one of them called in and paid the entire amount that they were asking.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call, but we're so minus on minutes. I'm going to have to go back to my guests. And Rebecca, thank you so much for your kindness and your patience this morning. Walmart Wars, Rebecca Messingill, it's been such a pleasure to have you here. Any last words for our listening audience?
You know, I think I would like for my last words to just be support your community radio stations and these great folks who are bringing you conversations about the things that matter in ways that allow your voice to be heard. So thank you so much for allowing me to join you today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and it's been a delight. And you have a fabulous day. And I want to also thank our listeners and let them know they've still got a couple of minutes to take advantage of that matching gift that we have of $500. Give us a call at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. It's been my pleasure. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
And good morning. It is a minute before 9 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland in the middle of our pledge drive. And lots to do on this Thursday morning at 9:30 on A Deeper Look. The guest is Robert Hillary King, a released member of the Angola 3, about the Free Albert Woodfox movement. At 10 today, hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Catherine Austin Fitz returns for another in-depth session on community business. At 11 today on Between the Covers, Oregon writer Steve McQuitty talks about his new book, Here on the Edge, which looks at a conscientious objector camp located in Waldport, Oregon during World War II and at the history of pacifism in the U.S. And at 11:30, it's The Film Show with news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. But first, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell, and that is coming up next on KBOO.
KPFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left-opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland.